Think back with me to the scene of the Last Supper. As Jesus is in that room with his disciples there with him, and as he looks around the room, they're reclined around this table. And in that room is Judas, who, as we talked about last week, would go out and for 30 pieces of silver would betray his Lord into the hands of his enemies. In that room also is Peter, whom we talked about this morning, that would go out after he had swore that he would not, after he was vehemently assured of the fact that he would be for Christ all the way. He went out and he cursed and he swore and he said, "I don't know the man." And he did so three times. In that room also is Jesus, God. So as they looked around and see what's going on, they can see Jesus and Jesus sees them. When we think about that scene, that's the last time that all of them were together. Because afterwards, Jesus says to Judas, "What you have to do, you go and do quickly." And so he does. He departs. Satan enters into him. And after the arrest, that we'll talk about in a few moments, the disciples, they scatter. They go elsewhere. Now, some come back, and Peter and probably John are the ones that come back to hang around a little bit more. We saw that this morning with Peter's denials. But tonight I want us to talk about the arrests and the trials of Jesus and the injustices that Jesus went through on our behalf so that we might have the ability to go to heaven as we do today. Let's look first of all at John chapter 18 and let's look at the arrest. And we've touched on this some already with the betrayal. But we'll look at John chapter 18 verses 1 through 11 tonight. When Jesus had spoken these words, he went out of with his disciples over the brook Kidron, where there was a garden which he and his disciples entered. And Judas, who betrayed him, also knew the place, for Jesus often met there with his disciples. Then Judas, having received a detachment of troops and officers from the chief priests and Pharisees, came there with lanterns, torches, and weapons. Jesus, therefore, knowing all things that would come upon him, went forward and said to them, "Whom are you seeking?" And they answered him, "Jesus of Nazareth." Jesus said to them, "I am he." And Judas, who betrayed him, also stood with them. Now, when he said to them, "I am he," they drew back and fell to the ground. And then he asked them again, "Whom are you seeking?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." So Jesus answered and said, "I have told you that I am he. Therefore, if you seek me, let these go on their way, that the saying might be fulfilled which he spoke, 'Of those whom you gave me, I have lost none.'" Then Simon Peter, having a sword, drew it and struck the high priest's servant and cut off his right ear, and that servant's name was Malchus. So Jesus said to Peter, "Put away your sword into its sheath. Shall I not drink the cup which my Father has given me?" So this is somewhat of a review of what we've already seen. Now, we've got the detachment of troops. It might be as many as 600 to 1,000 troops that are coming to get Jesus. We've talked about the garden being in a sunken place where torches and pitchers and all these lamps are around. And so if you can imagine, Jesus is there and he's looking up and now all of these lights are coming towards him. He knows that his time has come. He knows that he's about to be betrayed. He knows that he's going to be arrested and he's going to go willingly. But they don't know that because every time they come after Jesus, Jesus has been able to escape. Now, this time, Jesus has this dialogue, and I think it's interesting that as he says these things back to them, they fall back a little bit. They come back, and they begin to fall down. It's as if they were packed in like dominoes, and the first row began to draw back, and as they did, then they would cause others to fall as well. But Jesus is there for the taking. He's being arrested. As I understand the arrest process that they would go through, physically what might happen is they would take his right arm and they would twist it and put it to where the hand was back behind the shoulder blades like this. The soldier would also take his foot and would stomp down very, very heavily on the man's right instep. And so he would have his right arm and also his right foot immobilized as they would take his other hand back behind his back. And then from that hand also would be attached a rope to his neck. So his hands would be back behind his neck. Now, this is the position that we theorize that Jesus may have been in for some hours now to come as Jesus is arrested and being taken off for his trials. You might say, "Well, preacher, I thought Jesus was only tried once." Well, we're going to look tonight at two different sets of trials, six different instances where Jesus is appearing before someone. So they're not full trials, but there's six different instances of this as we go through. So Jesus now also, when he's first being charged by people here, the Jews are charging him of blasphemy. They're saying that he is claiming to be the Son of God. They're saying that this is blasphemous, but there's a problem with charging him thus. You see, the Jews aren't free people. Rome has the authority over them, and the Jews are not allowed to put anyone to death. There are lots of laws in play here. Not that they're all interested in going by the letter of the law, but there are lots of laws in play here. And one of the laws is that the Jews are not able to put anyone to death. So when they switch over from the Jewish trials with Annas and Caiaphas and the Sanhedrin over to the Roman trials with Pilate, Herod, and Pilate again, what we'll find is that they are switching the charge from blasphemy then to treason, as Jesus is accused of being a king, and that would then be a threat to Caesar. Now, what about some of these laws that are here? Well, first of all, it was against the law to arrest a man at night who was going to be charged or accused of a capital crime. That is, a crime for which he could be put to death. So that was one of the Jewish laws that was here. It was against the law to do that. Also, it was against the law to hold a Jewish trial at night. Well, where is Jesus and what time is it when the detachment of troops come with Judas to take him? It's at night, and he's in a very public place out in the garden. The commerce of the streets has been cleared out, and so if Jesus decides to run, being at night with everyone else off the streets, it would be very easy for these extra troops to chase Jesus down. He couldn't get lost in the crowd, so choosing at night was a strategy. But now if they're going to charge him with a capital crime, he shouldn't have been arrested at night. And also then they're going to be taking him first to Annas and then to Caiaphas, and those two sessions are held at night. Jewish law forbid that from happening, for trials to be held at night. It was also against the law, the Jewish law, to return a verdict, either guilty or innocent, in a capital case before sending the people home for at least one day, if not two or three days, for them to eat alike and sleep alike and to think on the evidence and then to come back and render their verdict. Now, this has a lot of logic behind it, because any one of us might be caught up in the moment of seeing some evidence only later to regret what we may have jumped to as a conclusion. But this was a part of the structure as well. So it was unlawful then for Jesus to be taken as he was, railroaded in just a few short hours to be ushered through six different appearances before a court. Also then, no defense was provided for Jesus, much as we have in this country. We have the right to have someone to defend us and to be able to plead our case, and that was not given to Jesus. Well, let's look first of all at the trials, the Jewish trials, and for this we're going to stay right here in John chapter 18, and this is with Annas. And so we're going to begin reading in verses 12 through 14. Now, this is after we've just finished here with Jesus and Malchus and Jesus telling Peter to put his sword up. Then the detachment of troops and the captain and the officers of the Jews arrested Jesus and bound him. Now, I talked about the process there of binding Jesus. And they led him away to Annas first, for he was the father-in-law of Caiaphas, who was the high priest that year. Now, it was Caiaphas who advised the Jews that it was expedient that one man should die for the people. And we'll find that over in John chapter 11 and verse 50. If you remember John chapter 11, if you remember anything else that happens, John chapter 11, what the shortest verse of the Bible is in John 11, what verse? 35, and what is that verse? Jesus wept. You know that. Why was Jesus weeping? Because Lazarus was dead, and because Lazarus' family and his friends were all mourning that. All right, later in that chapter, as Jesus calls Lazarus and says, Lazarus, come forth, he comes out of that grave. He's been dead for 4 days. We've covered some of this before, the significance of him being dead for 4 days and not just 3 days. The people that are there, they know that they have seen a miracle. They believe. Many of the Jews believed and followed Jesus. Some of the Jews, though, believed and went straight to the Pharisees and said, we've got to do something about this guy. And so it's later in chapter 11 that they're plotting to kill Jesus. Over in chapter 12, they plot also to go after Lazarus, because Lazarus is walking evidence that Jesus is the Son of God. So it was this Caiaphas here that is mentioning then at this time that it would be expedient. Let's just go ahead and take this person out of the way. There's some vernacular there, but let's release him from this life so he's not a burden to us. It's advantageous, expedient that one should die for his people. Now, who is Annas and who is Caiaphas? Well, in this section, it tells us now that Annas is the father-in-law of Caiaphas. Annas had been the high priest some years earlier. His sons had followed him as the high priest, and then now Caiaphas, his son-in-law, is in that position. And so this has been a long-held process of one family having a lock on the high priesthood in Jerusalem. So what we have now is Annas, after he is released from his duties as high priest, he's also now still involved in some of the affairs of what goes on. Some have said that Annas would have been the person in charge of the money changers and the ones that would provide the animals for sacrifice at the temple. Now, when you hear money changers in the temple, you automatically think about Jesus as he's running them out of the temple and getting on to them for turning his father's house of worship into a house of commerce. What's wrong with having this? Well, just very briefly, here's the issue. The issue was that people that would come to Jerusalem to worship would be willing to give of their money, and also needed to come and bring sacrifices. Well, two different ways this became very corrupt. One, they began the process of saying that since this was a Roman occupied territory now, if you brought Roman coinage with the symbol of Caesar on it, that was not acceptable. So you'd have to do a currency exchange. You'd have to do an exchange with money that was appropriate for the temple. And, of course, they're all but willing to help you do that. All you have to do is go to this table, and for a small price, we will exchange your coin for another coin that would be acceptable. Well, they make a tidy profit off of that. Also, the ones who would come in for process of bringing their sacrifices, if they've traveled a far distance, as many would have for the feast days, they would not drive their livestock with them. They would wait and purchase an animal that would be pre-certified for sacrifice beforehand, of course, at a very attractive price to the ones that are selling. So if Annas is the one who is in charge of the money changers and in charge of this commerce in the temple, how do you think he feels towards Jesus, who had just gone through and taken all these people and run them out of the temple? Well, there's probably a day in the back of his mind where Annas is saying, if I get the chance, Jesus, I'm going to make this score even with you. So let's look on now. This is 12 through 14 with Annas. Look at also 19 through 24. The high priest then asked Jesus about his disciples and his doctrine, and Jesus answered him, I spoke openly to the world, and I always taught in synagogues and in the temple where the Jews always meet, and in secret I have said nothing. Why do you ask me? Ask those who have heard me what I said to them. Indeed, they know what I said. Now, at this point, Jesus has not been charged with any crime. There's not been a charge levied against him. There have been no witnesses brought to him. And under law, he is deemed to be innocent, and therefore in line for several rights at this point. But in verse 22, when he had said these things, one of the officers who stood by struck Jesus with the palm of his hand, saying, do you answer the high priest like this? This was an illegal action. You can't strike a prisoner like that because he has rights. He's not even been arraigned to be told what his charges are at this point. Jesus answers this fellow and says, if I have spoken evil, bear witness of that evil. But if well, why do you strike me? Then Annas sent him bound to Caiaphas, the high priest. Jesus is going to be bound this whole time. He's defenseless. And so here he is in this first setting of a trial, and not much is accomplished here. Annas, probably with a score to settle and certainly not in favor of Jesus in a general sense, is now getting ready to send him off to Caiaphas. For this now, let's go over to Matthew chapter 26, and we'll go and look here verses 57 through 68. Matthew 26, beginning with verse 57. And those who had laid hold of Jesus led him away to Caiaphas, the high priest, where the scribes and the elders were assembled. But Peter followed at a distance at the high priest's courtyard, and he went in and sat with the servants to see the end. Now the chief priests, the elders, and all the council sought false testimony against Jesus to put him to death. But they found none, and even though many false witnesses came forward, they found none. But at last, two false witnesses came forward. And they said, this fellow said, I am able to destroy the temple of God and to build it in 3 days. And the high priest arose and said to him, do you answer nothing? What is it that these men testified against you? But Jesus kept silent. And the high priest answered and said to him, I put you under oath. By the living God, tell us if you are the Christ, the Son of God. Jesus said to him, it is as you said. Nevertheless, I say to you, hereafter you will see the Son of Man sitting at the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest tore his clothes, saying, he has spoken blasphemy. And what further need do we have of witnesses? Look, now you have heard his blasphemy. And what do you think? And so what do you think? And they answered and said, he is deserving of death. And so we're starting to go through this process now where Jesus is being railroaded more and more. In this setting here, we have Jesus. It's still at night. He's gone now to Caiaphas and to his house. And so you've got certain other ones that are there, not the full Sanhedrin, but people around. Now let's go over to Luke chapter 22 and let's see the third of these. Luke chapter 22, beginning in verse 63, and we'll see here where the Sanhedrin is more fully involved. Luke 22, beginning in verse 63 through the end of the chapter. Now the men who held Jesus mocked him and beat him, and having blindfolded him, they struck him in the face, and they asked him, saying, prophesy, who is the one who struck you? And many other things they blasphemously spoke against him. And as soon as it was day, now that tells you all of these things have been happening at night. Now, what did we say earlier? Okay, it's not legal that you should go and arrest a person who would be accused of a capital crime at night. You cannot arrest that person at night. Secondly, you can't hold the Jewish trials at night. But that's what they're doing. These first two settings are both at night. Now he's being readied to go and meet with the Sanhedrin. So as soon as it was day, verse 66, the elders of the people, both chief priests and the scribes, they came together and they led him into their council, saying, if you are the Christ, tell us. But he said to them, if I tell you, you will by no means believe. And if I also ask you, you will by no means answer me or let me go. Hereafter, the Son of Man will sit on the right hand of the power of God. Then they all said, are you the Son of God? And he said to them, you rightly say that I am. And they said, what further testimony do we need? For we have heard it ourselves from his own mouth. And so here in this setting, what we've done now is we've seen Jesus as he's been arrested in the garden. An overabundance of soldiers are there to take Jesus, although his time has come. He's willing to go, and he will go willingly. They take him, they bind him up, they lead him away, and the first stop is with Annas. So he's the older, former high priest. And then he's sent off to Caiaphas, who is the high priest at that time. And then he's sent to be within, in front of the whole Sanhedrin. And the Sanhedrin would be made up of 70 of the leaders, and they would be willing, they're like the Supreme Court of the Jews. And so their ruling is going to be the ultimate ruling. Well, what they hear here is that Jesus is being blasphemous. He's saying that he is the Son of God. Now, remember earlier we talked about blasphemy being the charge, and now we've got that charge fully in place. Now, those are the three trials that we've had so far. Those are all on the Jewish side. Now, let's go back to John chapter 18, and let's take a look at the Roman trials. Remember, this is a part of a series of lessons that we have. Last week, we talked about the betrayal of Jesus. This morning, we talked about the denials. This lesson is on the trials and the arrest of Jesus. Next Sunday, we'll talk about the crucifixion and also the burial. And the Sunday following that, we'll talk about he is alive and also he is coming back. All right, in John chapter 18, we're going to read now from verses 28 down through verse 38. And this is the first of these trials is going to be with Pilate. Now, they led Jesus from Caiaphas at the Praetorium as it was early morning. But they themselves did not go into the Praetorium, lest they should be defiled defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, this is kind of curious here, because they're being real sticklers about their religion, okay? Their religion would say that if they go into this place of judgment during this time of the feast, they would be defiled. They couldn't go and participate with activities of the feast that was coming up. So they're very much a legalistic, strict type of adherence to that, because they want to dot all the I's and cross all the T's. But yet, what are they doing? They're railroading a man who is innocent. They are lying. They are taking false witnesses. They are providing false testimony so that a man might die for something that he did not do. So it's a real mixed bag here that we see. And you know what? Not much has changed in 2,000 years. Because we have a lot of people in our society today, inside the church, outside the church, in politics, in business, in our neighborhoods, wherever, that will have one aspect of their religion that will hold to fast because they treasure that, and yet they will allow other things in their life that are wholly incompatible with it. So that's curious to me that that would be the case. But here's what happens now in verse 29 and following. Pilate then went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" Now, in the Roman trials, there would be about four different stages that you would see in every trial. And the accusation is one of these four stages. We'll find also in verse 33 that we'll find an interrogation. And in verse 37, we will find, we'll find a defense that's lacking, that should have been there. And then in verse 38, we'll find a verdict. And so those are the four things that you often find in a Roman trial. You'll find the accusation, an interrogation, a defense, and then a verdict. Let's read on now in verse 30. They answered and said to him, "If he were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him up to you." So he's asking, all right, Pilate's asking, what are the charges against this man? And they basically say, hey, if he wasn't guilty, we wouldn't be here with him. Now, what about Pilate? What kind of fellow is Pilate? He's not a good guy. He's not a good guy. As a matter of fact, he's kind of worn out his welcome in a lot of different areas. And so we see Pilate in a situation where he's really trying to make a lot of people happy that are the right people to be happy. And so he wants to keep peace. There have been some insurrections. There have been some unrest in his territory. And so he's feeling the pressure from up on high. Now, Pilate says to them in verse 31, "You take him and judge him according to your law." What are the differences in laws? Well, Pilate is the Roman authority over the civil part, and the Jews are over the religious part. Those are two separate laws. He says, "You take it under your law." Therefore, the Jews said to him, "It is not lawful for us to put anyone to death." Okay, it's a capital offense. So now it has to be with him because the Jews are not able to put people to death, that the saying of Jesus might be fulfilled, which he spoke, signifying by what death he would die. Then Pilate entered the praetorium again and called Jesus and said to him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" There's the interrogation. Jesus answered him, "Are you speaking for yourself about this, or did others tell you this concerning me?" Pilate answered, "Am I a Jew? Your own nation and the chief priests have delivered you to me. What have you done?" Jesus answered, "My kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would fight so that I should not be delivered to the Jews. But now my kingdom is not of this world, is not from here." Pilate therefore said to Jesus, "Are you a king then?" And Jesus answered, "You say rightly that I am a king, and for this cause I was born, and for this cause I have come into the world, that I should bear witness of the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." And then Pilate says to him a great question, "What is truth?" And when Jesus, and when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, "I find no fault in him at all." So now there's the verdict. And so you've had these four, the accusation, the interrogation, the lack of defense, and now the verdict. Now, this is the first of three times that Pilate will be saying, "I find no fault in him." A parallel passage to this over in Matthew chapter 27 that was read earlier, we're not going to read it this time, but if you're taking notes, that's verses 11 through 14. Now he's going to be sent up to Herod, and for this, let's go over to Luke's account in Luke chapter 23. Luke chapter 23, as we've discussed earlier, the different accounts of the Gospels, each lend something a little bit unique to the story, and so as we pull from each one, we can get a better understanding of what's going on. Luke chapter 23, verses 6 through 12 now, He's in front of Herod. Now, what about Herod? Well, Herod is looking forward to seeing Jesus, but not for what you might think. Herod wants to see a show. He's heard about what Jesus can do, and that's really his motivation here. When Pilate heard of Galilee, he asked if the man were a Galilean. And as soon as he knew that, he belonged to Herod's jurisdiction, he sent him to Herod, who was also in Jerusalem at that time. Now, when Herod saw Jesus, he was exceedingly glad, for he had desired for a long time to see him, because he had heard many things about him, and he hoped to see some miracles done by him. He's looking for a show, all right? Here, put this man's ear back on, or do something for me. Then he questioned him with many words, but he answered him nothing. And the chief priests and scribes stood and vehemently accused him. Then Herod with his men of war, they treated him with contempt and mocked him, arrayed him in a gorgeous robe, and sent him back to Pilate. And that very day, Pilate and Herod became friends. They weren't friends before, but they became friends with each other, for previously they had been at enmity with one another. So now we've gone through five different settings, three in the Jewish side, now two in the Roman, and the final side, we're going to go back to the Gospel of John as he's gone back, Jesus is taken back with Pilate. So let's go back to chapter 18 and pick up in verse 39. Pilate speaking here, but you have a custom that I should release someone to you at the Passover. And do you therefore want me to release to you the king of the Jews? And they all cried again, saying, not this man, but Barabbas. Now, Barabbas was a robber. And so then Pilate took Jesus and scourged him. Now, I don't know if you've seen The Passion of the Christ, Mel Gibson's movie, or not. If you have not, I want to warn you, if you ever watch it, it is a very gruesome movie. The scourging scene of Jesus was among the most heinous types of things that you'll ever see. I'm not going to describe it in any great detail here at all for you, except to let you know that when a man's back is stretched as he is stretched over a post, and when that back is open and then hit and struck by whips, and the whips would have different tails coming out of the whip so that it would inflict more damage, and each of the tails would have either bits of metal, stone, or bone in them so that they would grab into the flesh, and that's as far as I'm going to describe it. I don't want to take anybody's stomach away from them, except to let you know, our Lord did this for us. He did this for us, even though we did not love him. We did not want him. We didn't want anything to do with him. As a matter of fact, we as humanity were the ones that put him to death. For God so loved the world that he gave his only begotten Son, John 3:16. Romans 5:8, in that God loved us, God demonstrates his love for us in that while we were still sinners, Christ died for us. This is what Jesus is going through. It's unlawful. It's wrong. He's railroaded. False witnesses against him. Even if they held up with the false witnesses, the entire process is unlawful. Yet that's what's going on. All right. So they scourged him. Verse 2. The soldiers twisted a crown of thorns and put it on his head, and they put on him a purple robe. Now, you'll see the screen in just a moment again about the thorns that are there. We might think thorns like little thorns on a thorn bush or something. These are larger thorns. This crown of thorns is something that's going to be placed on his head. What are they doing? They're beating his head. They're beating his head. His back is flayed open by all of this this scourging. He's been bound most all of this time. The blood is going from his body. He is physically being beaten. He's being mocked. He's being scourged. And they said in verse 3, "Hail, King of the Jews." And they struck him with their hands. And Pilate then went out again and said to them, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you that you may know that I find no fault in him." That's the second time now that the verdict is that he finds no fault in him. And Jesus came out wearing the crown of thorns and the purple robe. And Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." Therefore, when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify him! Crucify him!" And Pilate said to them, "You take him and you crucify him, for I find no fault in him." Now, that's as far as I'm going to go in this reading. I want you to go, and I want you to look at these other readings, the gospel accounts. I want you to spend some time this month as we're looking at the last days of Jesus. I want you to read the gospel accounts. I want you to read Matthew, then Mark, then Luke, and then John. I want you to read them as we've been going through these lessons as it pertains to the actual events so that you get all four accounts of an actual event and you line them up. I want you to spend time meditating, thinking about what it means for a man to come in front of his accusers as Jesus did, willingly dying a terrible death because of something that he hasn't done. And he did this for us. He's praying in the garden, "Father, if it's possible, let this cup pass from me. But if not, not my will, but your will be done." Jesus goes, and he's going to partake of that cup. Jesus goes, and he's going to be taken, scourged. He's going to be railroaded, falsely accused, and convicted. He's going to be mocked mercilessly. He's going to have to carry his cross. And next week, we're going to talk about the death of Jesus. But he did this for us. And we don't often take the time to think about what Jesus has done for us. We want justice in this world. Oh, when justice isn't there, we cry out for justice. We don't want justice in our world for us, not in the world to come. I don't want justice from God. I want mercy. I want grace. I want forgiveness. I don't want what I deserve from God. I want what God promises through His Son. Jesus Christ did not get justice when He hung upon that cross, when He stood before Annas, Caiaphas, the Sanhedrin, Pilate. He did not get justice, but He went willingly. And He went silently because it was the Father's will so that you and I might be able to come to Him. Friends, I tell you what, when we start to realize what Jesus has endured for us, it's going to change our view of who God's Son is. Jesus is not just a great teacher. Jesus is not just one who performed miracles and had great throngs of people to follow Him around. Jesus, in the form of a man, suffered like you and I could never imagine. The injustices, the physical suffering, and He did all of this willingly because God said that is the plan. Friends, when we realize what Jesus has done for us, I dare say there's nothing in our lives that is more important than being right with a God who loves us that much. We have a song of encouragement that's been selected for this evening. If you find yourself here this evening and if you're out of line with where God needs you to be, in other words, if your relationship with God is not as it should be, and as a Christian you've gotten off that track, we encourage you, take advantage of this opportunity to either come and let us pray with you privately or publicly, pray by yourself if you need to, but be right with God. Get right with God again. Use this time of encouragement to realize what Jesus has done for you and to say, "I am so sorry for what I've done, to misrepresent you and to get off track, and God, please forgive me and put me back where I should be." Some of you here tonight and you're not yet baptized New Testament Christians, but you love Jesus. And the more that you learn about Jesus, you're going to learn something about God too. He loves you so much and He's so patient with each one of us. He doesn't want anybody to go to the bad place. He wants all of us to say, "I believe that Jesus is the Son of God. I'm willing to change my life and to say, I'll do what this book says instead of what I want to say." That's repentance. And I'm willing to put on my Lord in baptism, having the blood of His sacrifice to wash away my sins. What about it? Have you considered what Jesus has done for you lately? If you have need of coming, come now while we stand and sing.